Hey there,
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Jessica, and this is All Things Sensory by Harkla. Together, we're on a mission to help children, families, therapists, and educators live happy, healthy lives.
We dive into all things sensory, special needs, occupational therapy, parenting, self-care, and so much more. In each episode, we share raw, honest, fun ideas and strategies for everyone to implement into daily life.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey everyone, welcome back to All Things Sensory by Harkla. You're listening to Rachel and Jessica, and we are so happy you're here today.
Yep. And really quick before we dive into today's episode, we just wanted to remind you, or if you didn't know, let you know that we have an activity course that's called our Fine Motor Activity Skills course. I feel like I repeated myself, but that's okay. You got what I meant.
So in this skills course, we do have four different modules plus bonus handouts that go into all sorts of different fine motor skills, activities to do. We make it fun because you know us. We want these kiddos to be enjoying themselves and not necessarily thinking they're working, but building those fine motor skills.
The other thing that we really focused on with this course was making it easy and accessible, especially if you're a parent at home, using materials that you already have so you don't have to go to the store. And then, you know, therapists, you probably also have these different pieces of equipment like balloons or
tongs
already in the clinic. So it's super easy to just grab your materials and do it.
Yep. Okay. So the reason why we wanted to quick let you know about that is because it is directly connected to our episode today, which we are talking all about hand dominance.
Ooh. Okay. So hand dominance is basically, do you complete tasks with your right hand or your left hand?
Mm-hmm.
So as CODAs working in outpatient clinics, Rachel and I often had clients with handwriting challenges, and these clients also had hand dominance challenges. Specifically, the child would switch hands during handwriting tasks or other fine motor activities.
So as you're probably aware, we all have a hand dominance, unless you're me, Rachel, and you're kind of all messed up. I shouldn't say messed up. I'm unique.
You consider yourself ambidextrous.
In a way.
Yes.
In a way.
Yes. And we're not going to dive a lot into ambidextrous because it's such a, that's just kind of a different topic.
Yeah.
I think that would be a whole nother episode if we really wanted to do it.
Yeah. I don't necessarily write with both hands, but I'll write with my right hand. I'll throw with my left hand. I'll do sports like with different hands and different feet and whatnot. So, and Daniel's exactly the opposite, which is super weird. But you are right-handed for everything.
Oh, yeah. I suck with everything with my left hand. It's terrible.
And they say that lefties are more creative, right?
Yeah, because it has to do with, like, which side of the brain you're using when you use your dominant hand. That's what I've heard.
That's what I've heard, too. Okay, we're not going to focus on that sort of stuff today. We're going to talk about why it's important to establish a hand dominance and why, you know, we don't want to say, oh, my child is ambidextrous at 5 years old and woohoo, yay, they're using both hands. You know, that's not necessarily what we want to push for in the occupational therapy world.
Yeah, in the OT world, we like to have that hand dominance established about a certain age, and it varies for different kiddos. Just because then they are able to really develop those fine motor skills with that dominant hand, specifically handwriting, is just such a big thing for school-age children.
We do have some studies that we found that kind of go along with this topic, so we'll make sure to link those in the show notes as well. So a couple of studies have shown that a person's dominant hand will be stronger. So Jessica, technically your right hand will be stronger than your left hand.
It definitely is.
I feel like my right hand is stronger than my left hand.
Yeah.
But maybe we need the goniometer. No, what is it?
The grip strength.
Yeah, what we is that called?
The grip. It's just the grip strength.
The grip strength, I think so. Not the goniometer.
Let's talk about the different tasks that are affected by establishing a hand dominance, right? Handwriting is the main one. But even self-feeding, dexterity tasks like how you zip up your zipper, how you button buttons, how you tie, all of those different things are affected by hand dominance.
Dynamometer.
I knew you would think of it.
You Googled it. I did. I had to Google it.
You Googled it. Dynamometer.
I'm out of practice. Okay, okay.
So if we think about a child who has not established a dominant hand by a specific age, which we'll talk about in a minute, This child is continually switching hands when they're completing tasks. They're going back and forth. This is going to affect their strength as well as their overall coordination and control for these fine motor activities.
So like we mentioned earlier, hand dominance establishes at different times for different kiddos. But some people say you can see hand dominance as early as 2 years old, while some people say it's not until 6 to 7 years old. What do you say?
I say that you shouldn't be super worried about it until your child is writing, which mm-hmm. is at about 6 to 7 years old. Once they get into elementary school, you know, they're writing their name, maybe a little bit earlier for some places and some schools, but they're writing their name. They're starting to learn how to, you know, write sentences. But at, I feel like 2 to 4 is still too early because you're still wanting to establish that bilateral integration of both hands.
Yeah. I would say 4 to 5.
Yeah.
For my...
And they're starting to write letters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not necessarily holding a pencil the right way at 4, but by the time 5, I would want to see them using that consistent hand, whether they're throwing, whether they're drawing, whatever it is. That's what I would say for me.
Yeah.
So you can see that it varies. There's lots of different reasons as to why, but what's consistent is the fact that they do need to have that hand dominance.
Yeah. If you are a therapist, an educator, or if you have knowledge in this area, send us a DM and let us know your thoughts on when a child should establish hand dominance.
Yeah.
I'd be curious to hear other people's opinions, but let's talk about like some specific reasons why it's important to develop hand dominance. Mm-hmm. The first one is just going to be to increase strength and dexterity and coordination for all of the self-care skills that our kiddos have to do every single day.
Yeah, things like getting dressed, holding a spoon, a utensil, doing their hair. All of that requires hand dominance to do successfully.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, more success with handwriting and fine motor tasks. So as they're growing up and they're getting a little bit older, being able to hold a pencil the right way and, you know, have coordinated, you know, dynamic movements with those writing utensils.
Definitely sports and active activities like that. If you are into sports, that all sports require you to have an established hand dominance to successfully complete all of the different coordination tasks that are involved.
Yeah, even putting on your makeup. I mean, have you ever tried putting mascara on?
Oh my gosh.
With your left hand?
That sounds so dangerous.
See, I do it.
With your left hand.
I do my right eye with my right hand and my left eye.
So you're not crossing midline.
I'm not.
Oh, that's a whole nother topic. We have an episode on crossing midline.
We do. Yeah.
Okay, hold on. Pause for just a second. Don't go anywhere. We need to jump in and let you know about our newest webinar training, Intro to SPD.
Yep. If you don't know what SPD stands for, it stands for Sensory Processing Disorder. And in this webinar training, we dive into what sensory processing is and what it looks like if your child has SPD.
So we also give you a lot of detailed info on sensory processing, SPD, what it looks like. Plus, we give you ideas, tips, and tricks on how to get started to build a sensory diet.
There are handouts and downloads for you to take advantage of and implement at the end of the training.
So the Intro to SPD webinar training is perfect for parents, therapists, educators, really anyone working with children.
Mm-hmm. So head to the link in our show notes and check it out today.
Okay, now we can get back to the episode.
So how can you identify if your child is struggling to establish that hand dominance? How do you know if you should be pushing them to establish that hand dominance? How do you know here? Okay, what's the trick?
Well, I think in infancy, for very young children, before they even actually fully establish that hand dominance, you can see deficits in them neglecting one side of their body, right? So when your baby is rolling, maybe they're only rolling to one side. They're not rolling both directions. When they are transferring from laying on their tummy to sitting, maybe they're constantly only using the right side of their body and they're neglecting their left side. When they're crawling, maybe they have, what did you call?
The janky crawl.
Mm-hmm. They're maybe as they're crawling forward, they're veering to one side, which could also be a visual challenge. But maybe they're demonstrating weakness on one side. So in infancy and toddlerhood, watch out for that neglect of using one side of the body.
Mm-hmm. Even when a child is sitting and they should be passing a toy back and forth, right? That's a developmental milestone.
Like between their hands.
Mm-hmm, yeah, they're passing the toy from one hand to the other hand. If we're not seeing that, sometimes babes will even just have their non-dominant hand, I'd say non-dominant, but they'll have just a hand just resting on their lap and they won't even be aware of that hand. And that's a big red flag too, if they're just completely avoiding.
Yeah. And going along with that, you know, being able to bring both hands to midline, if they're not bringing both hands to midline to like hold an object, then that could be a red flag as mm-hmm. well.
So in school-aged children, switching hands with like writing tasks and cutting tasks, we'll see kids who will, you know, write with their left hand, maybe because they're starting on the left side of the page, and then they'll switch at the midline and they'll, you know, finish writing with their right hand. So they'll pass that pen back and forth as they're writing, mm-hmm. which is a big red flag as well, because they're not able to cross midline. So that's a big one, even with fatigue too. If they're cutting with their right hand and then they switch to their left hand, oftentimes it could be related to fatigue. That right arm is getting tired, so they just switch rather than sticking it out.
Yeah. So another red flag would be unable to master tasks with repetition, right? So with repetition of writing and cutting, your child should be able to master those activities with their dominant hand. But if they're not able to because they're switching or because they're tired, this could also include with like throwing and catching if they're not mastering those activities. And then, of course, those self-care tasks. Now, this does need repetition to learn it, but if with that repetition you're doing it every single day and your child is still not getting it, that could be a sign.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So the next one is poor bilateral coordination. So being able to use both hands to complete these tasks and coordinated fluid movements. So things like crossing midline, they'll turn the entire body instead of just reaching across their body to grasp something, or if they have something in their right hand, but they want to grab their drink with their left hand, but it's on their right side, do they put the item in their right hand down and grab it with their right hand, or do they reach across their body to grab the drink with their left hand?
Yeah, that.
Did you guys visualize that?
I was visualizing it as you said it.
Perfect.
Yeah. You were going kind of fast. So maybe, you know, if you need to rewind and listen to it again, that's fine.
I had to, otherwise I'd kind of forget what I was saying. So then also not stabilizing the paper with their opposite hand when they're writing or cutting. So if they are writing, you know, or drawing and their paper is moving all over the place, you know, we want to make sure that they're stabilizing the paper with their opposite hand. So if they're not, that's another red flag to be aware of.
And then another one is going to be challenges with left versus right or up versus down, top versus bottom. So some of those directional, positional language skills and being able to do things with those language or with those directional language components, if mm-hmm. that made any sense.
Yep.
That can be a red flag, but then also that left and right confusion after what age, like six?
Yeah.
Six or seven.
Mm-hmm.
And with that repetition, they're still getting confused on their left and right sides of their body. That could be a red flag as well.
And that can also be potentially related to a retained ATNR reflex too. So it's all connected here.
It's all connected. Oh my goodness.
You gotta look at the whole child.
Yes. Okay. Now the reason that you're here is what are you going to do about it?
Mm-hmm. How can you help?
How can you help if you notice that your child or your clients, your students are struggling with hand dominance? Mm-hmm.
So the first thing is you're going to build strength in both arms, both hands, both sides of the upper body. So things like...
Because we don't want one side to be neglected.
Correct.
Right? Because I think this is just an important note. Is that, yes, we have our dominant hand, but we still are able to do things with our non-dominant hand, and we don't want to fully neglect that non-dominant hand.
Yes. Perfect. Okay. Yep. So things like animal walks, TheraBand exercises, TheraPutty games, anything that you can increase that upper body, that grip strength, hand strength, proximal strength, just build that upper body strength on yep. both sides.
Yep. And then you want to be completing more bilateral integration tasks. So these are things that include both sides of the body. So some of our favorites are jumping jacks, clapping games. So, you know, clap, pat, maybe add a metronome to add that auditory component, and then always include crossing midline as well. So maybe you pat your legs and then you tap your opposite shoulders and then you clap. So you're incorporating both sides of the body and you're crossing midline.
Yep. So more cutting activities that require both hands. Crafts are great for this. And then rope pulling. So whether you're doing a tug of war game or you have a bucket attached with a rope and the child is pulling the bucket up the slide, or the child is pulling the bucket towards them while they're sitting down and they're pulling one hand after the other, that's a really great way to work on that bilateral coordination.
I was just thinking too, scooter boards and rock climbing are great for this, mm-hmm. because that requires both sides of the body to coordinate together as well.
Yep.
And like on a scooter board, if your child is laying on their stomach on their scooter board using their hands to propel themselves, you want to see that reciprocal movement, right? One arm, then the other, and they're going back and forth between their arms versus like both arms at the same time.
Yeah. It's almost like they're swimming. That's what we like to call it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. So another one is to place items at the midline so a child can grab with their preferred hand. So then you're going to encourage that full completion of the task with that hand versus switching.
This is something really good to do with like infants and toddlers who are learning how to grab and reach for objects is, you know, maybe at the meal table, if they want to use a spoon.
The meal table.
You know what I mean.
The dinner table, the breakfast table, breakfast nook.
During mealtime, place your child's spoon at their midline versus off to the side and see which hand they grab with, and then encourage them to continue using that hand the entire time they're using their spoon.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you got that out.
Gosh. Meal table. It's a meal table for whatever meal you're
That's
eating.
Like me in pajama trousers or something like that.
You call them pajama trousers?
We were talking about it in a past episode and with Kian.
Oh my goodness.
Okay. Simon Says is another fun activity. And when you're playing Simon Says, include those specific left, right directions and crossing midline. So Simon Says, touch your left leg with your right hand 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
Touch your left elbow to your right knee 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that.
And then just any game that works on left versus right. So the first one that comes to my mind is Twister. Mm-hmm. This is a great one to help them identify left versus right for not just their arms, but also their legs. There's like a card game.
Oh, yes.
You know what I'm talking
yes,
about?
Yes, it's the direction one.
Yeah, I'll mm-hmm. find it and link it in the show notes. But there are a lot of games out there that work on that left versus right. But even just a simple arrow chart, mm-hmm. if you just make an arrow chart and put it on the wall and your child has to use their arms to point in the directions of the arrows, and then you can grade it up and down.
I like left, right, center. Have you ever played left, right, center? It's like a gambling game, technically.
Yes.
But you have the dice and you roll them and you pass it to the left and to the right. And that's a fun game for older kids, too.
I'm going to disclaimer that we're not telling you to gamble with your children, but it is a fun game.
Use coins instead of dollar bills.
Okay. So hopefully that's helpful. Hopefully that gives you some ideas for a variety of ages. I think, you know, and especially in infancy, you know, just make sure your child's rolling to both sides. They're transferring into different positions using both sides of their body and not neglecting one side. You know, if you do have specific concerns, like if you do see your child is like completely neglecting one side of their body, you know, bring it up with your pediatrician if you're super concerned that they're not able to do things with one side of their body, because it could be maybe like a muscle tone issue or something. You never know.
When in doubt, rule it out. It doesn't hurt to get an occupational therapy evaluation. We always recommend that in-person care, that nothing compares to it. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely a route that you want to go if you are a parent of a child and there are those concerns.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a therapist, let us know your thoughts about hand dominance. Send us a DM over on All Things Sensory Podcast on Instagram and let us know when you feel that hand dominance should be established.
And what are your favorite activities to help work on establishing hand dominance?
Yes.
Okay, so before we let you go, we want to answer a couple of listener questions because that's something we're doing now. It's been a while. It's not new anymore, so.
Okay, so the first question that we got, not necessarily a question, but more of a request, and they were requesting sensory feeding strategies.
We have several episodes on feeding, so we will link those in the show notes. And then we do have an episode on messy play, because messy play would be a great thing to do if your child is struggling with feeding. So we'll link that episode in the show notes.
I feel like I'm going through it right now with Tripp, because he's at that age where he's starting to establish what he likes and what he doesn't like and give a little bit more pushback.
Yes.
So like today at breakfast, I made him this, and I don't cook, but I made breakfast. I did some mushrooms and peppers and eggs and spinach.
Dang, that sounds so good.
And he just wasn't into it. And so we practiced kissing it and licking it. And the food that he threw on the floor, he had to clean it up after he was done. So I didn't make him anything else. We had a smoothie that was left over from yesterday, and so I let him have that. But again, I just struggle with giving in to the sensory feeding strategies. And, you know, instead of making mac and cheese for breakfast or making like a super preferred food just to get them to eat,
right,
you know, trying some different strategies like we mentioned in those podcast episodes to help.
Yeah, I think the big thing is making mealtime fun is huge, right? Because for so many of our kiddos, mealtime is stressful because they're anxious about the food and the smells and the expectations, and it's just not fun. So I do think that the first step, if your child is struggling with feeding, is change it up and make it more fun. Make sure you're sitting down as a family. Make sure that it's engaging and conversational and there's options. Like, just make it more fun, I think, is huge.
Yeah, I was just thinking about our interview with Jenny from Solid Starts. Mm-hmm. That would be another good episode to listen to. And another good resource to look into as well is Solid Starts.
And then also, if your child is struggling with feeding, doing some preparatory activities before sitting down at the meal table
is
very important. So doing some activities that incorporate the oral structures, whether it's with like a Z-Vibe from ARC Therapeutic or Bubble Mountain or blowing cotton balls to a target through a straw, but just engaging those and activating those oral structures before eating can be really helpful.
Yep. The next question that we got was asking for tips and tricks for pinching. So they said, my son with autism pinches when frustrated, and we already use Play-Doh to help. So it sounds like you're using some strategies, or you're trying to implement some strategies. And my question is, who is he pinching? Is he pinching other people? Is he pinching himself? Is he sensory seeking? Is he seeking that input from pinching? Is he trying to get, you know, more of a reaction from someone when he pinches? Is he communicating that way? So we always like to say, find the why.
And then also, I think it's important, if you know that he does it when he's frustrated, catch him before it happens, if possible. Like, know his triggers. What is it that makes him frustrated? And see if you can help him through that frustration before he gets to pinching, right? So like, get some strategies in place, like maybe a vibrating ball, maybe some tactile play with Play-Doh or Theraputty or slime.
A stress ball.
You can make a stress ball out of like balloons and flour, and just see if you can give him some strategies to do before he gets frustrated at the point of pinching. Mm-hmm.
And we do have an episode, an interview with our friend Danielle, who talks a lot about self-injurious behavior. So we'll link that in the show notes as well for you to listen to if you haven't already.
Okay, great. That's all we got for you today.
Yeah. Thank you for hanging out with us today. And if you have questions, you can send us a DM or comment on our post that we share on All Things Sensory podcast over there.
If you're an iTunes listener, we would love it if you could leave us a review on iTunes. Take a screenshot of you listening to this episode and tag us on Instagram, All Things Sensory Podcast, because we love seeing when you guys listen.
Yeah. Okay. We will talk with you guys next week. We won't see you. We might on Instagram, but we won't see you here at the podcast. We'll just talk your ears off.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to All Things Sensory by Harkla. If you want more information on anything we mentioned in the show, head over to harkla.co/podcast to get all of the show notes.
We always have the show notes and links, plus full transcripts to make following along as easy as possible for everyone. If you have follow-up questions, the best place to ask those is in the comments. comments on the show notes or message us on our Instagram account, which is at Harkla_family. If you just search Harkla, you'll find us.
Like we mentioned before, our podcast listeners get 10% off their first order at Harkla, whether it's for one of our digital courses, one of our sensory swings. The discount code SENSORY will save you 10%. That code is SENSORY. Head over to harkla.co/sensory to use that code right now, so you don't forget.
We're so excited to work together to help create confident kids all over the world and work towards a happier, healthier life.
All right, we'll talk to you guys next week. Just a friendly reminder, this is general information related to occupational therapy, pediatrics, and sensory integration. We do not know you or your child, therefore we do not know any specific needs. Therefore, you should always refer back to your pediatrician and occupational therapist for more information.